Justin Santa Maria, thank you for coming on the Tech Meme Ride Home. And Justin Santa Maria, thank you for coming on the Internet History Podcast.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's just dive right into it. You started at Apple in 2003. Is that directly out of college, or what had you been doing before you joined Apple?
Yeah, I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and came out to the Bay Area to go to college in 99. So in 2003, I joined Apple straight out of college. I think I interviewed there for six straight months looking for a role at Apple. My job coming out of college was to get a job at Apple.
So, you know, that's an interesting thing to me. I've only talked to a handful of Apple folks for the Internet History Podcast, and most of them were in the era of, is Apple going to make it, you know,
right.
the late 90s or whatever. So, you know, you're kind of, you would be right at that period where Apple obviously always had no problem finding talent, hiring talented people, because they were Apple and they had a certain sheen, even in their worst days of, you know, this is where the cool kids are.
Sure.
But, you know, so when you're joining in 2003, that's right when the iPod is taking off and Apple is becoming again this sort of player in the tech world where it kind of wasn't for a little bit, you know? So just a cultural question of what was the energy like? Did you still get the sense of like, okay, we're still in a rebuilding period here? Or what was it like when you got there?
Yeah, great question. When I first arrived at Apple, I remember the iPod had launched. There was not, iTunes was not on Windows yet. So they were using a third party, player for all of that. And in fact, my first project, you can imagine my excitement when I joined Apple, and my first project is to work on iTunes for Windows. And I was like, oh, that was not, what I had expected, but, hey, I got my foot in the door, and I was more than happy to work on that. The atmosphere at Apple going in was one that I would describe as in transition. What I recall back then were a couple of things. One, Apple was not out of the woods yet, and you could definitely feel that. One of the big things I remember was that the classic Mac OS, the old Mac OS, not the current Mac OS, and Mac OS 10 had been co-developed. And I remember Mac OS 9, what it was called at the time, completely winding down and that team being dispersed, and some cuts coming from that as well. And so there was kind of a not quite out of the woods, because iPod was this very niche, very successful, right? But still, it was like the experience was for Mac owners at the time. And Apple really starts to stretch its legs a bit after I get there, and you can start to feel momentum come from there. But it was still, I would say Apple still felt like a very small company when I joined, if that makes sense. And one that had been through a lot and was still fully, you could still feel the next part of Apple and the old, you know, old Apple, quote unquote, part of Apple when I was there. And I would say through the course of, you know, I was there for 10 years, you felt that kind of melt away over time.
You mentioned the interviewing for 6 months, it felt like.
Yeah.
What was the interview process? It sounds like there were multiple rounds. And
well, you know, I think it's one of these things too. If you recall, oh, well, I go into college and it's startups, and you know the famous, you know, socks.com and Webvan and all this stuff. And then the next year, you know, come 2001, it's all gone. It's a wasteland, right? And I was like, oh, this is very volatile. And so I think, you know, I don't think that was just startups. I think the whole tech industry felt that. And so coming in 2003, and this was another example of Apple still not out of the woods. It wasn't like how it is today where there's mass hiring going on and you can't find enough talent. It's like you know, there's three or four positions open, you know, in software engineering at the company. And it's a real, the belt is still very tight. And in fact, you know, I had been interviewing for different positions. And in fact, the position I got is, was not even software development. It was build engineering, which is basically, the task of assembling the software, making it, a reproducible, compilation, and then assembling like the help documentation and, the README file and putting all that on a CD to be pressed. And, you know, I was like the person that pushed the button that said, this image is basically ready to go get pressed. And you know, it was kind of the last gate. So it was a very kind of operational role. But that was, you know, for me, it was seeing one, the iPod and saying, wow, this is a really cool way to apply technology. But I think for me, it was also seeing that there was this vision that computing could be accessible to everyone, and that the, you know, Mac OS X at the time, I remember being very swayed by, wow, they're putting like a really powerful Unix-based operating system and making it usable and beautiful and getting people out of the meta work of managing a computer, and really just trying to make powerful tools for people to do what it is they want to do. And I was like, that's a really, you know, especially I think back then, a really kind of unique take on what technology was for. And so I was like, I'm going to figure out how to get into this company. So it wasn't so much that it was a long process, because I had a recruiter who kept trying to find the right role for me, and believed in me, but it was just super competitive because there were so few jobs available. So I'd be waiting for a job basically to become available for me to interview for and try out for. And I took the first one I could get.
Well, so you mentioned working on the iTunes for Windows, but also don't you get started on iChat as well?
Yes. So
this is to put historical context in this. This is literally the height of AIM, and sort of like the messaging sort of wars, where, you know, they cut off access to this one, to that one. So interoperability was a key thing or whatever. So tell me about iChat, and if I'm right about that, if that's sort of where you make your bones, tell me about that project.
Yeah. So my first job, so I was, you know, build engineer, I come out of that doing, working on iTunes among other projects, and essentially internally moved to the iChat team. And iChat, like you said, the height of AOL Instant Messenger, and Apple had cut a deal so that, you know, basically we get to piggyback off that network and you can sign in, to, AIM with iChat was huge. That was, the communications platform, the personal communications platform of its day, and certainly the juggernaut. I come into that team and they're not even talking about sending messages to each other. If you recall, iSight cameras were going to be the thing that was coming out, and iChat was a perfect vehicle to show the power of how you can video conference, you know, very simply and easily, and not just video conference one to one, but we were working on what we called internally U+3, which is you and three other people. And I don't know if you remember, but it had kind of the light boxes and the images. And it was like a pseudo 3D view. And I remember being a very new engineer on this team. This was, you know, clearly at the time, this is 2004, a priority of the company. And I remember giving regular demos to Steve and being part of that team. And it's a U+3 demo. So it's you need other people. And so we're sitting, you know, we have Steve, where he normally does his demos in a conference room. And then I'm in my boss's office with a teammate of mine, and then someone's in another office, and then someone's in another office. So there's literally like four computers set up to go. And I remember being instructed, like, whatever happens, pretend like it's going well. Like, because, you know, it's beta software. This is like weeks or even months before release. And sure enough, you know, the call connects, we hit accept, and it's just green. Steve, we can't see Steve. Steve's just green. And, you know, we're like, hey, hello, Steve, how's it going? And he's saying, you know, hi, da, da, da. Okay, let's add another call. And it goes and it does the, you know, the, actually, I think FaceTime still had, or had it till recently, the one sound.
Yeah.
And that's when it would like pop out from the one to one into like the, into the 3D view. And I remember Steve going, he's, and literally this is the opening, hey, interaction with Steve story. Oh my God. I'm going to make the crowd shit their pants. And what was really interesting about that is he, in his mind, he thought so experientially that in this very first demo of like new technology and everything, he's like, how is this story going to go? How is the demo going to go? How are we going to articulate this to the public? And it was so infectious. And I think that's something that I realized being like, wow, like this guy's into this. He's not just, you know, pretending when he gets on a stage, like he's into this. And really, yeah, people, minding that
people
moment.
Always say about him, oh, he was the best showman, whatever. But to be a good showman is easy if you actually really give a shit. Like, yeah. If you really, really love the product, then being a showman is about, I can't wait to show you this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that was super legit with Steve. And I mean, I think when you knew he's excited about something, you knew. And I think it showed on the stage, right? It means like this landed in the right way. And no detail was too small. In the early iChat, the U+3 is like, well, how do you know if someone can accept that type of call, a multi-way call versus a single-way call? And you know, you're looking at the different icons and the different options, and it's like, nope, Steve didn't like any of those, or Steve picked this one. I was like, why do you pick that one? And you realize like, well, he can only pick among what you're giving him. So if you don't like it, don't show him. That's kind of your power as a contributor to the team. Like, figure out what you want and figure out three versions of what you want and come to that. And one of the things that's really interesting is he could say no to something one week and then the very next week say yes to that thing. And I remember early on being super frustrated, being like, why isn't he consistent about that? And I remember this for the icons where it was like going to be a purple icon versus a green icon. And then it ended up being that it was like an overlay green with like multiple, like it looks like it was stacked three deep. And the first time he picked purple and I was like, oh, that doesn't make any, you know, oh, that's no good. And we switched back. And I was like, well, but he already picked purple. And it's like, well, he decided that was the bad idea. That didn't work. We changed it. And this idea of like, who cares what my past decisions were with new data and with new kind of insight or having ruminated on it, I changed my mind and there's nothing wrong with that. Is something that I think as a leader, many people are often pressured into like consistency. Like I must be consistent and I must stand by my beliefs. And I think Steve was someone who was like, if I believed that like we should turn left when the whole time we've been turned right, he was very clear about let's just turn left. And as someone who was very early into his career, that has left a, like a huge impression on me in that the right thing to do is the right thing to do, even if you know, even if you thought differently a day ago or an hour ago. I see Steve practice that very regularly and sometimes frustratingly so. You're like, I just tore all that work out of the product and now I'm putting it back. But it's like, you know, you get paid it either way. Let's make it right.
At the risk of yada-yadaing other projects in your career and things like that, I'm assuming that working on iChat is what sort of when the phone comes along gets you involved in messaging and FaceTime and things like that. So before we get to that, given the famously, you know, secretive nature of the iPhone project and things like that, like you personally, what was your experience with first hearing about it or first hearing inklings about it before you even know what it is? give me some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I've been on iChat for about a year at this point. And this is what happens. So we are all on the Infinite Loop campus, right? And I'm iChat's offices are on the second floor of 2 Infinite Loop, or IL2 is what we call it. And one day it's like, we're moving. We're moving, and they're creating this whole lockdown on the second floor of IL2. And that's that, you know, and you're like, huh, okay. And again, I'm early in my career, and I think I'm like a terrier, where I'm like, well, what's going on? Like, what? Like that sounds important. Like, you know, at the time, that's where Scott Forstall's office is. Now his office is behind lockdown. Huh? That must be super important. Whatever's happening there, right? And so I'm like, I feel like I'm like just trying to figure out what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. And what I start to see is that one or two people on each team for macOS, you know, a couple of people from the mail team, a couple of people from, what are the other teams? From, you know, just different teams, one or two people no longer work on that project, are now working on the second floor of IL2. I was like, wow, that's interesting. Like, they're building something new. It's very clear. And they're using one or two engineers from each team to like put this thing together.
It's like they're rapturing people.
It's weird. It's really weird. Yeah. And for me, I just couldn't let it go, you know? At some level, I'm like, I want to be on this team, right? Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're doing, but that seems like if I'm able to, I want to go there. And what's really interesting, this ties back into iChat, and this ties back into like how little things at the time make huge differences. I had worked on a feature called Bonjour Messaging, which was allows you to connect via iChat. You can talk to other computers on your network. And I had worked on it with a very senior guy. We had basically evolved Bonjour to be much more better behaved on the network or whatnot. It was like a smallish project, but it was good work that we did. And he had gotten, you know, the call to join this top secret team. And so one day, and I remember it was a Thursday, and I remember it was, I believe it was WWDC week. Because there was that still when like stuff was happening out on the in the main area of the Apple campus when they would bus everybody. So there was kind of a party atmosphere. And I'm sitting at my desk and I get a phone call. Oh my gosh, to even say that now. Like I'm getting a phone call on my desk phone that's plugged into the wall, which is a thing back then. and it's this guy, his name's Jeremy. And hey, Jeremy, what's up? And he's like, hey. I go, what's up? He's like, you want to come work with us? And like, that's implying like, I know, you know, I know the IL2 project, you know, and I go, can you tell me what it is? And he goes, no. And I go, well, is it worth it? And he's like, oh yeah. And I was like, okay. And that was it. And, you know, I meet who my manager is going to be, you know, meet a couple people, go through a very informal kind of interview process over the next week. And then, you know, a week later, I'm in those doors of IL2 second floor. And with no idea, like I remember sitting down and them going, do you know what we're working on? I go, I have no idea. They're like, do you have a guess? And I was like, I think you're working on a phone, because that was a thing. Like, sure. It was like, I think we're going to work on a phone, blah, blah, blah. But there was nothing official about that. And they're like, yep, that's what we're working on. And I remember getting my first tour of the phone going, oh my goodness, this is, you know, what people felt, I think, you know, that day in January in 2007 is what I felt that day. And this is about 6 months before that, going, wow, this is very different. And I can't believe we're going to do this. I can't believe we're going to pull this off. This has a lot of work, you know, like immediately I'm like, oh my goodness, there's a lot to do here. And it was, it's a point in my life that I'll never forget. And I remember very vividly, the day I joined.
When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation, where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months, or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride. With everybody fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. I use this, and you should too. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee, so get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Well, and you know, you had worked on messages in, I guess the word I would use, it in a much more stable environment. But for the messaging with the phone, you have to interact with SMS, and right, you have to be connected to the network persistently. And so, you know, just those are some obvious headaches. But like, how tough of an engineering project was it compared to just doing messaging on a desktop?
Well, it was very different, right? Because what we aren't doing is figuring out, well, okay, what our feature set needs to be. It's like pretty clear. You need to support SMS messaging in the first one, right? And the abstraction layer had been built. Like, hey, we're going to abstract the idea of needing to know who the carrier is or what their particularities are in a lower level framework. And so for me, I think there were two things that were really challenging. It was performance and memory, right? These phones did not have any power. I remember the first time we got an actual working prototype of the first iPhone that wasn't on a breadboard plugged into a voltmeter. It had no power management on it. And I remember it lasted like for 8 minutes, you know, it was like something ridiculous. And you realize, okay, there's no battery, you know, the type of power we're used to dealing with, even laptop power on a battery, is infinite compared to the amount of power we have on this. And then, you know, there was this very clear directive that this needs to feel real time. If you scroll and there's a delay, it ruins the illusion. Remember, this is before capacitive touchscreens aren't a thing, you know, and everybody's experience with touchscreens at that point were the resistive kind that were just garbage. Like they would try to do stuff and it's like, it's laggy, doesn't catch touches and all that. And it's like, we had to be as responsive as possible. So like basically half of the project is optimizing performance and making it so it feels slick. And then reducing your footprint, your memory footprint, because this is a full multitasking operating system. And, you know, I remember practicing and practicing and practicing for that demo that Steve unveils the iPhone with, where, you know, he goes through and does like 8 things with the phone, you know, and you're like, oh my God. You know, I did that through my whole Christmas break, running through that demo over and over again. And so did the whole team.
When he hits the part that you're responsible for, when he demos the messaging and stuff, is it one of those things where you guys are just sitting there just like, you know, can't breathe?
And, oh my.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's an excitement. I mean, you're so proud in that moment. Like you're like, you've busted, you know, and I, you know, I've joined the team after a lot of the foundation had got set. They're like ready to really knock out these apps. And so there's people who are sitting next to me who, you know, the past several couple years of their life have been dedicated to The Secret. For me, it was, you know, around 6 months of my life have been dedicated to The Secret. And you're seeing it come out and you're so proud, but at the same time, you have that feeling I can't speak for everyone, but for myself, you know, you got that feeling in your gut, right? Like you're incredibly nervous. You're like, I hope this isn't that 1 in 100 case where that just doesn't work or that it crashes. And when you get through it, I think it's more when you're past that point where you realized how wound up you were, because you feel the wave of relaxation come over you. And it wouldn't be the first time that I had felt that. Maybe that was true, because I had done some stuff for iChat and stuff that had gotten demoed. It was the first time that it really felt like it counted, but it wouldn't be the last of just absolute gut-wrenching experiences in, you know, Moscone Center in San Francisco, in the second row, watching, you know, something you've been working on being demoed to the public for the first time by the most iconic, you know, salesperson of your generation.
This is a few years later, but again, in the interest of time, I'm jumping to FaceTime.
Absolutely.
FaceTime, just give me how that project is even conceived. I'm assuming it's pretty soon after that, because, you know, once you put a camera on the front, this is a phone after all, so it's about communicating with people. So how did that project begin? And
I mean, Brian, I think you line it up right. This phone's going to have a front-facing camera. And yeah, you can take pictures of yourself. There's not even a word for that yet. But who really wants to do that? Like, is that all that you need? You need something more, right? That tells you how quickly things that we take for granted just aren't things to take for granted. And also that camera. So it's like, what can we do with this front-facing camera? And for a long time, we were like, we want to do our own messaging service. We want to do our own video conferencing. We want to do these things. And now it's like, okay, here's a reason to do it. Because what is the feature set for a phone with a front-facing camera? It's like, okay, you can take your own pictures. That's great. What if you could actually video call other people? And so it's like, well, let's figure out how to do this. And the very early cuts of FaceTime are basically a port of what we do on iChat in terms of those connections. And, you know, we have this, you know, basically it wasn't called FaceTime at the time, but, you know, the video calling app. And it's its own app, right? And it has basically like a buddy list, like you would for AIM, you know? And so you have people there. And I remember very vividly that one Friday. So we normally demoed on Mondays to Steve, but on one Friday, I remember my VP or my boss, actually, Henri, and our program manager, Kim, coming to my office, like, Steve wants to see a FaceTime demo. And I said, great, well, I'll have it ready for Monday. And they're like, no, like, he wants to see it today. And it was like, you know, 11 a.m. I go, okay, cool. I'll get it set up, you know, this afternoon, we'll be ready. He's like, no. He's walking over from aisle one right now and wants to see it. You have about 5 minutes. And, you know, you're in development And when you set up a Steve demo, especially on Mondays, you spend, you know, your Friday's ruined, basically. You're setting up for it. You're like prepping, you're making sure it's going to go as well as possible. You want the right conversation to happen. Let me put it that way. And I literally have to go into an engineer's office and grab, I'm like, hey, do you have two phones that work? And he's like, well, they don't really, once they're connected, they work. But like the connection's flaky because we were bringing up the push notifications service to like.
That's almost nonsensical. These communication devices, once they're connected, you can communicate with them.
Right. I mean, that's the irony of working on software that's not built yet, where you're like, okay, there's some glitch here where the phone doesn't wake up when it receives a notification. So you got to keep the phone awake. And keep the phone awake, then it usually works. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So I'm like, okay, let me just have it. And like, you know, usually Steve deals with pristine devices. And so like, I'm looking, I'm getting a cloth. I'm like wiping them down for him and stuff, putting them there. And he comes down the hallway. Oh, hey, Steve, you know, pleasantries are exchanged. And he's like, well, let's see it. So I hand him the phone and I hold the phone. And I go into my office, which is right in front of this interaction. He's in the hallway. So I go into my office and I look at the phone and I see Steve on the phone. And I go, you know, what I do when I normally test FaceTime, I go, I hold my face up, you know, like this, and I count and I show the numbers to show the video and audio synchronization. This is like a standard test we do. So I go to Steve, I go, 1, 2, 3. And he goes, what are you doing? Talk to me like a normal human. I go, oh, sorry. Hey, Steve, how's it going? How are you doing? He's like, I'm doing well. And I kid you not, Steve's holding his phone like this, which is not the most becoming angle that anyone's ever seen. And he goes,
he's looking down for the listeners.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Like he's holding it above his belly, essentially.
Yeah. He's got it like at chest level, staring down into it. At
yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
So I've got this kind of like, you know, the neck, you know, the neck face type thing. And what's funny is I know that, you know, we're all in a hallway. This is, you know, now we've grown bigger and it's all basically the communications team is on this hallway. So all the engineers are kind of at the doors listening. I'll never forget this. And he goes, I look abominable. and you're like, oh, you know, you don't. I'm going to be like, hey, Steve, you're holding it wrong. It's like, okay, like let's keep going on with the demo. And I remember coming out of that demo and a couple of things happened. One, it was like, okay, we have a lot of work to do. Yes, obviously, this was a completely impromptu demo. But two, he was like, why is it a separate app? He's like, this should just be in the phone. You should just be able to tap a button and it go from a phone call to a video call. And I'm like, okay, like, it's at the end of the day, it's software, right? It's ones and zeros, it's dictionaries, it's strings. Could we do that? I guess we could do that. And I remember him like drawing the phone display of the six buttons on a phone call. And I remember him going, what's the difference between pause and hold? and there is a difference. It's effectively for the user, there isn't a difference, but there is a difference. Pause, you can't hear either side, whereas hold, I'm sorry, not pause and hold, pause and mute. Pause, neither side can hear each other, mute. You're just muting your side, but you can hear the other side. And he goes, we don't need pause. And he X's it out and puts the like little camera icon. We should just put it there. And I'm like, okay. And literally we had to spin up a whole other project for like, well, how do you bootstrap your phone number or your phone credentials so that you can just have this one button upgrade to FaceTime? But it was in those moments where it's like, hey, three very crisp sentences, a quick drawing, and your project's like totally different now. And I think for the better. I mean, there's no question that's a much better experience. I mean, like, okay, now set up your FaceTime and like have a whole different list and all this stuff where it's just like, it's like making a phone call. And eventually we came out with a separate app and all that stuff. But it was that kind of work where you're just like, wow, like that's the kind of person Steve was. And then we had such a team that was like, well, let's figure this out. Let's ship this. Let's do this. And so within the scope of the thing we were already building within that year, because the hardware has got to ship from the factory on this date and time, we can't slip, you know, we added a huge chunk of scope and we're able to pull it off, which is just, you know, an incredible feat.
I kind of have to ask this when FaceTime comes out and Steve does the demo and he says it's open source, open standard, industry standard. Everybody's going to use this, and obviously that's never happened. And you can't speak for the different strategic reasons at different times, but what are your thoughts on the infamous industry standard of FaceTime? Yeah.
Right. I leave Apple around 2013, which is right when this happens, or a little after this happens, because I do ship iMessage in the interim. My take on this is it was easy to say and hard to execute. And understanding like what that, how that would look or what that would take was like very unclear. And I actually didn't really, I was very focused on the consumer side of making this work. And so I think there was a whole like, how do we do that? And like, how does that actually end up happening? That I think those questions like end up taking a backseat. A lot of stuff happens in the interim. There's actually a lot of turnover of the team and of actually at Apple. I mean, in that period, Steve passes away, Scott leaves Apple. And so I think it's one of those things that through time, it gets lost. My take is, what's interesting about things like FaceTime is the level of flexibility you have in a closed system. And I think this is like all products experience this, about how fast you're able to move, what changes you're able to make, what's a breaking change, how do you get this better and better and better. And when you go to standardize something, you kind of have to set up your stake in the ground for what's the base experience, and you're it's really hard to change that. And in many ways, that's why like sending a message across phones via MMS is a terrible experience. It's built for standards that are 30 years old or more. And so how you continue to develop on that and also create an open thing, it was a tall order. And I think, again, I can't speak for Apple, but I think there's still so much more to do over here that I think the open part got lost along the way.
I thought of a way of how to do the Steve sort of experience question, and that's to break it into two. If you tell me your best Steve interaction where you're walking away from it on cloud nine, and also your scariest Steve interaction where you might have wet yourself.
Okay. I don't know if Steve ever caused me to wet myself. I have the lore stories like everyone else. I think that FaceTime experience that I told you, there was definitely a, that could have gone better, but we got a good day. The next demo needs to be better. And I think part of that was preparation. And part of that was, understanding like latency issues and things like that. And I remember going, that could have gone way better than it did. The funniest thing I remember, the thing that left me on cloud nine, and it's kind of a zinger story, is actually the launch party of the very first iPhone. It was at, what was it? Oh, I forget what it was called, but it was the Exploratorium in San Francisco, which is kind of this interactive science museum. And, and it's the thing where it's like, oh, you play with the things and there's like the table of crab or whatever, and you've got like different stations and people are mingling. And it's super exciting, right? Because the phone is out, and this is like 2 days after, right? After the launch. And I see Steve, and we are just chatting. And I remember telling him, I go, I know this is going to be big. And he goes, why do you think? And I said, well, because my sister, who's infinitely cooler than I am, just waited in line in Austin, Texas for like 4 hours to get one. It's like, she's not going to wait in line for anything. And she waited in line for the phone. And not because I work here. She doesn't actually care that I work here. She just thinks this thing's super cool. I was like, if you have people like her doing that, like, this is a big deal. And he goes, this is the biggest product launch in the history. It's gotten more column space than any other product launch in history. And he goes, and the only thing that allows me to sleep is that, unlike when we had the Mac, we have software update, And I laughed and he laughed and we went on. And I was like, oh, that felt good. I got the, the cool anecdote, we're chatting. And then I remember later on in the evening, he goes up to address everyone. And he goes, you know, the iPhone's going to be the most successful product in the world. And I know this because it's had more column space than any other product launch in history. And the only thing that allows me to sleep at night is that, unlike the Mac, we have software update. And I was like, he was not talking to me at all. He was practicing for what he was going to say up there. And I was a test subject for how I would react. Exactly. and I thought, did he just say that to everyone for that whole hour that he spoke to? Probably.
Either that or you dog fooded the joke for him. So
Yeah. So he got a chuckle, so he used it. And I think that's you know, for me, that moment, the reason I remember that moment, not just for that anecdote, but, you know, Steve is someone who wore his heart on his sleeve. And that was a man who was beaming about the thing that he had built with this team, and just he was nothing but happy in that moment, and it's how I'll remember him.
Let's be real for a minute. Most guys would wear a t-shirt every day of their lives if they could. The problem is that most t-shirts are not acceptable to wear at work or out on a hot date night. But today's sponsor, Cuts, has finally changed that. Cuts t-shirts are such high quality, wrinkle-free, and so buttery soft that you can look like you're dressing up even when you're dressing down. Yeah, you heard that. Wrinkle-free. You never have to substitute comfort for fashion ever again. If you see me in a t-shirt, it's likely one from Cuts. I'm also a huge fan of their AO five-pocket pants, the right sort of step up from jeans without going all the way into dress pants, like literally my ideal Venn diagram of professional looking but comfortable feeling. When you touch something from Cuts, you can immediately feel the quality. Their proprietary fabric blends are ridiculously soft and breathable, they don't wrinkle, and they look way more expensive than they actually are. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code RIDE at checkout. That's 20% off your order at cutsclothing.com with promo code RIDE. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the perfect blend of style and comfort with Cuts Clothing. cutsclothing.com, promo code RIDE for 20% off. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there is no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. And these docs all have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. I have personally used ZocDoc to find a podiatrist when I needed one for the first time ever in my life. Go to ZocDoc.com/techmeme and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/techmeme. ZocDoc.com/techmeme.
So again, I'm going to just mention that, you know, you obviously worked on, you know, CarPlay and you know, the foundations of Game Center and all sorts of things. And I want to give credit to your time at Airbnb too, real quick in this way, which is to say that it occurs to me that, like Apple, Airbnb is a company that requires an intense commitment to the experience. So I'm curious if, not to put words in your mouth, but if you were able to bring some experience about experience from Apple to your time at Airbnb.
Yeah, you know, Brian, you hit the nail on the head. You know, deciding to leave a company like Apple, especially after 10 years, is very difficult. And you don't see a lot of people leaving Apple, especially from that generation of Apple. And what was cool is what I realized is that I had built up a series of lessons and anecdotes and just things about, like, what makes products great, or how did Apple make products great? And, like, could I use this in other areas? You know, also I had felt a little bit of, I had built this sandbox And now I wanted to play in it. And I think Airbnb was a way to kind of do that, right? Like build a great experiences on a platform that you'd been working on for so long. And for Airbnb, I think you hit the nail on the head where it's like Airbnb is trying to provide an experience to people and happens to use technology to do that. I think that's kind of the arc of my career is like, how do you connect people and use technology to do that? And Airbnb has this unique moment when people travel, when people take trips, you know, how do you do that? I think for me, the experience piece, you know, Brian Chesky, has in spades. He really echoes that kind of mindset at this passionate mindset about what a guest at Airbnb could do and could say, and what could be unique about their experience, and how do you make that better? And how do you instill a sense of confidence by doing a digital transaction for a real world experience? I think Airbnb had very strongly. I think what I lent to with my time there was, how do you get a large group of people to get together and ship something, you know, on time and very well. And it's kind of the mechanics of Apple on the inside applied to this like very lofty goals. And it's like, how do you take something that's experiential and then break it down into projects and tasks and schedules and put it all together and still have a cogent, coherent experience at the other side. And so I think, you know, my role at Airbnb was very much around some of the things like I remember in 2014 working on the rebrand of Airbnb from going kind of the website to the new thing. And there was a whole controversy about the logo and stuff back then. But, you know, this was, you know, a 200 person engineering team, a dozen designers, and like kind of we're all going to do this and launch it all at the same time. And, you know, that was something that to date Airbnb hadn't really done before. And I think it was, you know, through some of that experience at Apple that we were able to pull that off. But also just trying to champion the fact that, you know, just because you're an engineer doesn't mean you don't need to be empathetic toward what you're building for and who you're building for, whether it be a host or a guest. And I just try to instill that in the team. So I think my time at Airbnb was very much understanding, you know, for me, working out what were my core skill set and how could I apply them there, and working on a product that I did feel like was trying to create the connection that I so value via technology.
Well, let's wrap it up by bringing it straight to the present and tell me about future, yeah. And what is the experience of future?
You know, great question. And future is a digital platform where we connect people with real expert personal trainers to help people meet their goals in fitness and in health. And it sounds very simple on the surface, but for me, the key unlock here is that we have a fundamental belief that it's actually people who help people in this area and achieve their goals, and not stuff and not technology, but these things enable an experience to happen. I'm not like a fitness guy. And that's something that's interesting. So my co-founder and I, about 5 years ago, this is after me at Airbnb, we sit down and Rishi Mandel, who's our CEO and I'm the CTO, we're co-founders. We start talking about, you know, the state of health in America and talking about how, you know, every year millions of Americans resolve to try and get fit. And by the end of the year, 80% of them have failed. And that most of the solutions out there are about content and about kind of putting the onus on the person in terms of, hey, if this doesn't work out, it's not because the plan was wrong, it's because you didn't get it done. And for us, it's like, and for me, it's a very self-reflective journey because I was like, I'm a busy person. I've done great stuff in my career. I have a wife, I have children now. I've had a hard time with my fitness, you know, and I've stopped and started, I've been on diets, I've done all sorts of stuff. And what the realization is like, I lacked an infrastructure to like help me succeed. And if I could have someone who could provide me accountability, who could provide me expertise, and could also understand, like, they needed to meet me where I was. You know, it wasn't me being like, you told commit to something, but me being told, hey, I get it. You're busy, stuff changes, your kid gets sick, you have to work late, all this stuff. We'll figure out a way to make this work. And maybe some days it's a stretch, and maybe some days it's go run 4 miles. But the point is, we're going to just get you into on a journey, basically. And we're going to do it together. You have support. You have a person. And so Future is really about connecting coaches, expert coaches all over the country with our members who do everything from get off the couch for the first time to already working out 7 days a week. And the cool thing about Future is we meet them where they're at. And this is the kind of digital hospitality that I learned at Airbnb, combined with this understanding that this is all done asynchronously with text chat through an app. And this understanding that now more than ever, you don't need to be physically co-located with someone to really receive the service that you need. And fitness, we believe, is no exception. And you can still have a highly personalized, highly engaging experience in doing so.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure you've thought of this, but the through line to all of this is it's messaging. Because, you know, I was looking up that, yep. Like, you know, people, I think, are texting their trainers like 4 times a day on average and things like that. So this is the through line through all of that is that yep. The technology is just the communication. Right.
That's right. It's about connecting people with other people. You know, I'd like to say my whole career isn't about figuring out building a new technology and figuring out how to apply it, but rather taking the building blocks that the internet and technology and communications and messaging provides, and how do we connect people in a way with Future. What's really interesting is when a coach and client relationship goes well, yes, you're talking about your exercises and what your workouts are and whatnot, but it ends up becoming much richer because messaging is such an open medium that your coach gets to know about you and who you are, what your motivators are, what your blockers are. And it really becomes a relationship, a connection there. And what we do on the technology side is how do we empower the coach to actually not have to pore over all of the data being generated by your watch and actually digest that and really give actionable insight to our coaches so that they can provide a highly personalized experience at a scale that we aspire to be at. And that's actually a really intense technical problem that presents itself very simply to our members, which is like a very Apple thing too. It's like, it just kind of works, but there's just a lot going on behind the scenes to enable it all. Because what we want to do is take things like wearables and take the data that comes from there. And instead of making you the arbiter of that, you, the individual, you get that, you give that to an expert who can actually reflect that data and incorporate what they're seeing into your workouts or into your plan and understand that in a way that I think right now we all feel kind of on an island trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do for my health? I know it's important. What do I do? We're trying to take all that stuff and make it actionable by putting a human in the loop. And it's actually a really different way of looking at fitness and especially connected fitness and technology.
Well, so everybody check out the app Future, get in shape. Go ahead.
It's about the journey. You know, I think it's, yeah. I think that's the thing. It's like everyone starts somewhere and we're here to wherever you're at, even if it's like not in shape, but it's like get moving. That's fine.
Just get going.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. Yeah.
Justin Santa Maria, thank you so much for coming and sharing all those memories with us and telling us about Future and all that good stuff.
Brian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.